Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags! Get on the grid, sports grid. I'm on the grid. I'm Gabriel Morenci. Mike Blewett's on the grid with us as well. We've got a lot of NFL news to get to. Specifically, the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts have been a pretty busy team over the last couple of weeks. A lot of stuff going on in the sports world, like, is there going to be sports anytime this summer? We talked about it earlier in the week. College football athletic directors already starting to get concerned about the college of football landscape. And, you know, we've been in such an assumption that, it's just sort of now. Well, football will be here. Football. Yeah. It's going to football. Like, we're going to wave a magic wand. And I got to tell you, right now, there are some concerns, specifically in the college football world, that the calendar is starting to catch up to them a little bit. They just can't show up on September 1st and play football.
That's right.
But as of now, Roger Goodell says, hey, the NFL draft is proceeding as planned right now.
Yeah. So on the college football front, look, I have a lot of contacts in the college space, and I've been communicating with them. And I would say that... there are many industries that have been extremely hard hit, right? Notably the service industry and restaurants shutting down across the country. But when it comes to schools, higher education, education really of all sorts, there's no way that you can congregate the students back together before the next couple of months at a minimum, right? These college football players typically get into camp in that end of that first week of August, which right now we're looking 4 months away, basically. And it isn't a slam dunk. I know some people that have had to, schools have had to dip into their endowment just to keep things moving at a significant cost. So it's going to be a very, a decision that's going to be thought over long and hard before they get 100 football players back on campus living with one another again.
Yeah, and you have to think, really... We can't predict the future, but I think it's safe to say that the future of everything will be different moving forward from here on out. And will there be students allowed on campus beside at Liberty University with Jerry Falwell, which is another story? Yeah. They're ready to go. They'll play this week if you want to play a football game.
Yeah, they will.
They'll host it. And in fact, you know what? It's a good point. Dana White. Dana, if you're looking for somewhere to host your UFC event, why not Liberty University's campus?
Because that, campus.
And I use right the term Virginia. Loosely, Dr. Falwell's got a spot for you.
It's a good use of air quotes.
Yeah, I don't use them often, but I figured I had to there.
Yeah.
Pastor and doctor.
Yeah.
Man of God, I can keep going on about this.
Sense of error that is shocking.
Only because I say this, because with every campus closing right now, Liberty University actually said, not how we're opening up. Yeah. And he encouraged the students to come back. And it's so bad, like the mayor of the town is like, no. Like, he's like, what are you, an idiot? Right now? What are you, an idiot? So listen, we'll get into the NFL stuff because, listen, the NFL, they're in a unique situation. Their season is still a ways away. So they're handling their business right now. But I wanted to pay tribute to Curly Neal. Curly Neal, 77 years old. And for my money, at least, although, I mean, my money's different than the modern money right now because the kids voted Zion Williamson as a better college basketball player than Danny Manning in an ESPN poll. Yeah, exactly.
He came up a few games shy of Danny's
just
output.
Just a few. Yeah. So when I just sort of would assume that everyone would know about Curly Neal and his importance... I'm probably not, actually. So just for the record, Curly Neal, Harlem Globetrotters, the bald one, so to speak. Yet somebody that was bigger than basketball, somebody that is as big of a name in basketball to me as Michael Jordan or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, think about like the influence that Curly Neal has had on the sport of basketball. How many kids have picked up a basketball because of him? you know, how many people has he entertained? The ambassador, just being a diplomat for the game, an entertainer, a great player as well. We're talking like 22, 23 years, man. He toured with the Harlem Globetrotters. And let's be real, man. Him and Metalark Lemon, those two were the Harlem Globetrotters.
That's right. That's what I was going to you sort of encapsulated exactly what I was going to say. There are really two names of people that are aged and probably older, a little bit younger. Obviously, their place in the zeitgeist has diminished over time, even though the Harlem Globetrotters are still rolling along and touring the globe. But the Harlem Globetrotters were a much bigger cultural piece when we were younger. And the two guys that were out in front were Meadowlark Lemon, who was their probably most outspoken player, and Curly Neal, who was really known for his ball handling techniques, spinning the ball on multiple limbs, is probably a precursor to the whole and one movement, really showing a lot of ball tricks and things that people did with the basketball that wasn't really done on a standard NBA or college game. And it went beyond basketball. First of all, it was global. They were on TV almost every week on a Wide World of Sports type program that was entertainment for the whole family. Beyond that, Gabe, they transcended into cartoons. And they were regularly featured on Scooby-Doo, which was something that people of our age range watched all the time. So it wasn't just about basketball. They were cultural icons. Basketball player from the 90s, example, looked up to the Globetrotters on some level.
Yeah, you know, as you stated, they were a pop culture phenomenon, the Harlem Globetrotters, bigger than basketball. And, you know, modern people can't really understand. You know, I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago, even from television purposes. Like, you know, like MASH used to get like a 30 share. Now, I was seeing the TV ratings. Like, hell, Three's Company had a 27 share on television. There were only three networks at the time.
Yeah.
People were bigger stars. Everything was just sort of bigger in that era. And, you know, Ed Sullivan Show, The Love Boat, Scooby-Doo, Gilligan's Island, their own cartoon spinoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, just and also, guys, a lot of people don't realize is basketball was not big in the 70s, right? Like, the Harlem Globetrotters were bigger than any NBA team were. Like, yep. Specifically at the time, like, Curly Neal and Meadowlark Lemon, like, they were as big of a name as Dr. J, who was probably the biggest name in basketball
at the time. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, they were that big. Like, they were bigger than the NBA. That's what I'm trying to explain to, like, younger people tuning in right now.
Yeah.
Now, you know the Globetrotters probably, and I don't know how many of you have seen them. Seems like it's a rite of passage that you see them at least, or then fathers take their kids to see them. But the Globetrotters are one of those entities where it's good if you're a kid, it's good if you're a teenager, they're good if you're an adult, right? Like, they really do, they entertain everybody in a certain way. But I think some people don't realize that these guys could ball for real.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Especially in the old days, they could really ball for real. Going back. Now we go all the way back to 1948, all right? Mm-hmm. And the defending champion, the Lakers were the champions, even back then, except they were in Minneapolis.
Right. George Mikan.
Yeah, George Mikan. They literally won like 100-plus games and stuff. And they played, it was an all-white team, 1948-49, all-white team. Harlem Globetrotters were an all-black team. The Globetrotters entertained, but they could really play, like, for real. They played the Lakers. They beat the Lakers. And the crazy thing is, they did the Globetrotter stuff, guys. Like, there's some tape of it, rare film of it. It's crazy. Like, you'll see them. They're, like, taunting the NBA champions, like, going through the legs and doing crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And the Lakers got pissed. Like, there's nearly a fight. Because they lost. They were embarrassed. They said, well, let's play again next year when we have time again. We're going to play you again. Like, and it got built up as, like, oh, this time it's even real.
Yeah.
The Globetrotters beat them again.
Yeah.
They beat them again. Symbolically, racially, it was big. They say it was the game to change basketball, so to speak. One of the games to change basketball. And, you know, and then subsequently they came on to be that sort of phenomenon. Yet they could play for real. Now it's a little different. Now you'll get guys, you know, there might be a guy from the Pittsburgh Panthers, you know, or Syracuse or something on the Harlem Globetrotters. Yeah. But now it's more entertainment. Now it's like, all right, can you handle the tour? Can you entertain kids? Can you do this like little confetti trick? Yeah. Right? Like now it's a little bit more entertainment. Before, though, the level of basketball was over the top good. Like those guys were great, great. Like they could play with anybody, but that's who they were. They were the Harlem Globetrotters. And I remember probably about 25 years ago, I can't find it on YouTube. It pops up like, oh, Harlem Globetrotters versus Michigan State. But I remember that's the most like modern real game that they played that I saw.
Yeah.
The Globetrotters played against Michigan State for real on like Wide World of Sports type thing. It was like, hey, on Saturday on ABC, Judd Heathcote was still the coach. Mm-hmm. And Michigan State won by like 2 points or something. It was a freaking battle, man. It was a great game. It was a battle.
Yeah, I think too that the point you're sort of alluding to is that it got to a point where for the college institution and or for an NBA team, it was all downside for them, right? They're going to go out and battle in some exhibition game and potentially get embarrassed. And I don't think that's something that they wanted to be subjected to. Look, the players that we mentioned, Curly Neal and Meadowlark Lemon, they're known for their trickery and their flair for entertainment. But it wasn't as if these guys couldn't shoot, regularly hitting half-court shots. They could all dunk. I remember a player that I was around the same age as in college. You mentioned Pitt. One of the like sort of star players for Pitt who transitioned from being a college player. He tried to make a run at the NBA. It didn't happen. He became a Globetrotter. I remember Orlando Antigua. I remember him really well. He was a really good college player in the old Big East and transitioned to becoming a Globetrotter. Now, there also, when you're talking about decades ago, there wasn't the outlet for European basketball and international basketball. So the level of players that could play for the Globetrotters was clearly greater than it is now. It doesn't mean that the players aren't extremely talented still, but
now the money,
players have more outlets exactly to earn money in a variety of different ways. Not just the G League, but Europe, you can make millions, even if you're not good enough for the NBA.
That's exactly right. And in those days, it was a little different. The NBA didn't really pay that much money. The NBA wasn't all that big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, being a Globetrotter was, like, bigger. You know, it was different. And, you know, they made a lot of money over the years, the Harlem Globetrotters. People, like I said, I'm always fascinated by that. I don't think people realize it. Like, the modern kids that call LeBron the king and stuff, it's like, guys, this league, like, this ain't Rome, man. We don't go back, like, 100 years with this league.
Yeah,
they've been playing basketball for a while. And it was a white guy's league, and everyone knew it. They were like, it's not even really, and it's not a real league. And then in the 70s, the NBA was nearly bankrupt.
Yeah.
The NBA
massive drug problems.
Yeah, it was deemed too urban. You know, basically, it was too black for America at the time. Like, you know, the big afros, the funk music, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it didn't translate to middle America on television.
Yeah.
And word of no lie, like the first NBA finals that I watched was Washington versus Seattle. And it was on tape delay. Like it was not live.
79, right?
Yeah, 1979. I specifically remember telling my grandfather, I'm going to stay up tonight because the finals come on after the local news.
Yeah.
And even as a 9-year-old, I remember him telling me, keep the TV down and don't tell your grandma. Basically, he went to bed and like I stayed up. And I remember being up late at night. Like, think about that, guys. The NBA Finals were on tape delay after the local news in Vermont. You know what I'm saying? Like, come
on. Into the early 80s, they kept it on tape delay. And it's been told a thousand times. Yeah. It's been told that. I was just about to say that. Magic and Larry really changed everything because they had an iconic meeting in the NCAA championship game, and it translated to them both being immediately fantastic NBA players. And that Lakers-Celtics rivalry built up everything through the 80s. You obviously had a more than capable and iconic commissioner in Dave that was able to make this business model work and then started promoting players that, you know, it always takes a little bit of luck. So having the Magic Larry thing to dovetail into Michael Jordan is a significant confluence of events. But Dr. J is also part of that confluence of events too. And that's why when you talk about the 70s being NBA not being popular, they couldn't get ratings. There were drug issues rife through the league. And the Globetrotters were fun family entertainment that you could watch on a Saturday afternoon. That's why they were so popular.
You know, and people also don't realize, like I said, when people call LeBron the king, and listen, I'm not here to, this isn't to attack LeBron James, but there were people that set up before him. And I've always thought that LeBron was the most comparative. His game was to Magic Johnson, actually.
I agree with that.
LeBron as sort of a modern Magic Johnson, but
yeah.
We talk about Magic Johnson and Larry Bird sort of saving the NBA, making the NBA what it is. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson also made college basketball what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like college basketball was big, but it was a niche regional sport. They put it on the national map. Like it was the most anticipated, you know, Michigan State, Indiana State, Magic Johnson versus Larry Bird, black, white. It was just sort of, it sold itself perfectly.
Yeah.
For them to be rivals and then for them to end up, you know, on the East Coast, West Coast, Boston and Los Angeles, as you stated, the teams that they ended up on set it up perfectly. And that college game, as they played in the national title game, that carried over into the NBA. And they were both ultra successful very early in the NBA because they joined good teams.
Yeah. And Larry playing for Indiana State, a virtually unknown school and not even really on the college basketball map. I remember reading a story a long time ago, Nolan Richardson, to give you a sense of how the lack of coverage at the time, Nolan Richardson would be listening to games on the radio during that March Madness tournament, having no idea what Larry Bird looked like. And he was sure that Larry Bird was African-American because he was hitting every shot, scoring points constantly.
And so then Nolan Richardson finally saw Larry Bird was black, he was shocked when he saw he was white.
Yes. He finally saw a game of TV. He's like, oh, this guy's white. I didn't anticipate this.
And well, and it's one thing to be white, but Larry Bird just looks so goofy, too.
Yeah.
Like, everyone now knows him and you're used to him, guys. But at the time, it was like, holy crap. It's like, and he came from what? Like French
Lick, Indiana.
French Lick. He looked like, you know, people were like, man, this guy looks like a hick for real. Oh, like, real farm kid here. Except he lit it up. And as we know, his competitive nature was legendary. Yep. But we bring up Curly Neal because it's all intertwined, guys. I mean, not that there wasn't a history of basketball before the 70s, but really the Harlem Globetrotters leading into Dr. J, into Magic and Bird is sort of what got all this momentum going for what we know now to be the NBA, that is like the number one sport in the world when it comes to pop culture popularity.
That's right.
Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The history of basketball a little bit with the passing of Curly Neal. Rest in peace. You know, a true Hall of Famer, this guy. Like this guy, like I said, we can talk for hours about the impact that the Globetrotters and Curly Neal have had. And of course, you know, one thing with the Globetrotters, they've entertained tens of millions of kids, just like Philip Rivers does every weekend with his own kids in the backyard. So Philip Rivers and now a member of the Indianapolis Colts, and the odds makers like the move, actually. Mm-hmm. I was surprised. Like, the Colts are actually the favorites to win this division, which also somewhat surprises me when you consider the success that Tennessee had last year. And I don't really see Tennessee not being good again right now. But the markets already liked Philip Rivers going to Indianapolis. I'll tell you more than I did for the record. But the Colts have been a pretty busy team from Philip Rivers to now signing Xavier Rhodes, mm-hmm. Minnesota Viking defensive back standout, Xavier Rhodes, now a member of the Indianapolis Colts. They don't re-sign Eric Ebron right now, but If you look at the Indianapolis Colts, their win total is 8.5. They're favored to win the division. And with bringing in Xavier Rhodes right now, if you look at that secondary, you look at the defense as a whole, the Kenny Moore kid played well. He really came on. So now suddenly I think you got a nice 1-2 punch there. You got Malik Hooker in a secondary. You have Darius Leonard, who we see such an impact of Darius Leonard when he's there and he's not there with that defense and what he means to them. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, so I just wanted to bring it up for people that might not be noticing. The Colts are putting things together right now. They're all business.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the trade for DeForest Buckner, obviously a big move there as well. So the interesting thing about what is, they actually haven't done a ton of moves, but they've done some very strong strategic moves. Rivers on a one-year deal. And, like, there's really no bad one-year deals in the NFL, right? They're going to give it a shot. It's more about them deciding that Jacoby Brissett is the long-term answer there, so they're going to give Rivers a shot here. Anthony Costanzo, a longtime left tackle for them, was contemplating retirement, but he decides to come back on a two-year deal. They bring in DeForest Buckner at a $21 million per year salary, which some people balked at, but when you dive into the contract, again, it's really just a two-year deal. It's $40 million for the first 2 years, maybe a little bit north of that. But after that, they can get out of it relatively cheaply. They gave up their first-round pick this year, but I'd trade a mid-round first-round pick for DeForest Buckner's productivity. He's only 26. So based on how they are built on the offensive line, what they can conceivably second round of the draft with another potential wide receiver to help Phillip Rivers. They've really built wisely through the draft and in utilizing what cap space they have to make strategic signings. So I'm on board. The 8.5 win total, I actually think this is a pretty strong division with the three teams. The Jaguars might be the worst team in football. But at the 8.5, they have to play both North divisions this year. So they're going to be facing some tough quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson and Aaron Rodgers and Cousins, Ben, Stafford, all those guys. But I think the Colts have a real shot here because I think they're built pretty well. They'll continue to get better on defense and probably add a weapon at wide receiver or tight end.
Yeah, they're going to need, well, now they're going to need to at tight end. They lose Ebron, and we'll get to that. Why Hilton's banged up. He's not getting any younger. And they're going to, you know, Paris Campbell, you know, they're hoping for bigger things from Paris Campbell.
He was hurt a lot.
About the wide receiver as well. Yet, I still think Tennessee are a better football team. And to me, the fact of the matter is Phillip Rivers is no good. So, you know, they can think, oh, well, Jacoby Brissett held us back. He really didn't. He wasn't great. He did hit a wall. That's the thing with Jacoby Brissett. I think they realize he's not really going to get better. He is who he is. Okay. He's okay, but he's not really going to get all that much better. So I don't have a problem with that if they want to go in a different direction with a quarterback. But Phillip Rivers won't be the answer. He's still going to throw interceptions there. I know the thought process is that, hey, they have a better line. He's going to be more protected, the offensive scheme. And I do buy into that a bit. I think Frank Reich's going to put him in a better position to succeed than Anthony Lynn and his coaching staff were. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if he can get any velocity back on the football. But for me, Tennessee are still the team to beat. I think the wrong team's favorite to win a division.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think this is really tight. Now, I certainly don't have the Colts way in front. I can see them being over the 8.5 more so than I can see them winning the division, to be honest, if you're asking me to sort of cap, which I think is more likely. Now, the problem with Rivers is you and I both know, and everybody watching knows, that he's always thrown a really ugly football, sort of shot puts it down the field. Well, the only problem I have with that, and it was effective for a long period of time, but the only problem I have with that is when you get to a certain point in your career and physically you're not as able as you once were, which I can't suspect a 38-year-old Phillip Rivers is better than a 24-year-old Phillip Rivers, then I think those little things in the margin start to become an issue. It is a good thing that he's more protected, but will he still be the guy that is forcing throws to try to win games. They don't really need that. They need to play more conservatively, which is why Jacoby Brissett was the starter last year. They feel like they can win with the way they're built, playing a little bit more conservatively than some other teams that have more dynamic play, like the Chiefs and Ravens and other teams.
The Colts are too injury prone. Phillip Rivers is old. Marlon Mack, I like Marlon Mack, but Marlon Mack's not a legitimate number one just sort of guy. Mm-hmm. I know we could buy into it every year and all the Marlon Mack this. He doesn't stay on the field enough. You know what I mean? He just doesn't.
Yeah.
So he's good, but he's not great. You know, so he's good, he's not great.
I agree.
You know, I guess, you know, Hines okay, good, not great. You know, just to me, T.Y. Hilton gets hurt. They're just fragile, in my opinion. For me, I don't know what it is. The market overvalues the Colts, like, time and time again. Like, last year, I remember they were favored by, like, 10 points with Hoyer as their quarterback 1 week.
Yeah.
And then they lost the game outright to the Dolphins,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're overhyped again. Yeah, they're overhyped again for some reason or another now. Now, one thing that surprises me, Frank Reich is a pretty smart guy. He's been around the league a long time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's him that's doing this. I think it's Ballard himself, the GM there, who I think is a very good GM. Like, you look, he came up from Kansas City. He was one of the assistants at KC, like, scout personnel guys, GM. And over the last couple of years, you see the changes in the Colts. Type of guys. Buckner, they bring in. They draft Malik Cook. Or, like, Xavier Rhodes, like, they want physical, tough guys. Yeah, beefy, tough guys on that team. Less finesse than they used to be. But, you know, the bashing of Ebron is going on now. And it's a common thing. And I never like it. It's like, well, what do you guys say this when he's there? Like, you know, it's a big Boston thing. Like, Boston sports are known for this. Basically, like, the hit job begins, like, before you're even out of town, after you get traded in Boston. The media will hit you. Oh, he wasn't liked in the locker room. Oh, the clubhouse. Oh, there was this. And, like, it always starts. And you see these hit jobs that happen all the time. Like, if a player says, like, oh, coach was out of control and the room is this, people are like, oh, this guy's unbelievable. He's a bad, you know, I can't believe he said this. Yet players seem to get ripped all the time now on the way out. Like, good example, we heard a story that Stephon Diggs quit on the Vikings, right? That Zimmer walked into the room and somebody said, where's Stephon? And Zimmer was like, you know what? F him. I don't care where he is. He's not going to be on our team next year, type of stuff. And the Colts, for one reason or another, like, he's not on your team anymore. So I don't know why you need to, like, assassinate him on the way out. But there's all kinds of stuff that Ebron didn't care, that Ebron gave up on them, and Ebron really wasn't hurt. And you know what I mean? And he wasn't hurt, and he just told him, I'm not playing. Yeah. You never heard any of that when he's there now. And they said basically, good luck, Pittsburgh. And then they even throw in, if they're expecting Heath Miller, he's the opposite of Heath. Like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? We know he's not Heath Miller. And what are you talking about? Like, there was a lot of little dog whistles in there as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. Heath Miller is, like, an extremely well-respected Steelers player, and it's not necessary, in, like, as you said, to start comparing guys to him. It's not fair to the player that's coming in that has virtually no reputation with the team. You can't start comparing him to Ring of Honor type of players.
What the hell does Heath Miller have to do with Eric Ebron's career?
Exactly. It's not fair to him. And he's best buds with Roethlisberger, too, so that makes it even more adversarial. The Steelers are trying to give him a shot here. They need a weapon like that. Vance McDonald was a disappointment. Nick Vinette leaves during free agency. So they need somebody to come in and be an added weapon to the team. I have no problem with the signing by the Steelers. It's a cheap deal. So I'm willing to give the look. If you take Ebron's whole career, I thought he was disappointing in Detroit. He came to roof off the league by scoring 14 touchdowns, I believe it was, and gave them a really good respite when Jack Doyle wasn't healthy. Now, last year, there were rumblings during the year. The Colts were obviously disappointed that Ebron was going to elect for surgery mid-season because they thought he was possibly going to come back. Now, there were rumblings of that, but I'm with you. On the way out, I just don't see the point of doing it. He's not on your team anymore. Work with Jack Doyle and any other tight end that you bring in.
Yeah, and the thing that surprises me about this is that people are surprised about who Ebron is. This is where it comes down to, is it the player's fault or is it the evaluator's fault?
Yeah.
I've always said this. Ryan Tannehill was the classic example of that. Ryan Tannehill didn't suck, but Ryan Tannehill, no, he doesn't look like a guy that should have been taken seventh overall as a quarterback at the time, right? And it's like people, they project who they want you to be on you, and then you're disappointed
constantly.
If you're not.
Yeah.
Right?
So I mean, that's the nature of drafts, right?
Yeah, but Ebron is who he is. He's going to be good sometimes. He's going to make plays. And then sometimes he's going to drop a really easy pass. And basically, and if you dug deeper, somebody on the Colts had to actually say something nice about him. And they said, listen, he's a hell of a player when he wants to be. And that was the gist of it, that basically he's a hell of a player when he wants to be, and that's what's frustrating. And he didn't want to be for us, basically. That's what they were getting at. And they said that, you know, if he's in a good mood, he's great. But if he's not, so once again, this goes back to something that you and I talked about on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Mike Tomlin, right? Yeah. There's a lot of coaches right now that would say, I don't want to deal with Ebron, man. I got to babysit this guy. I got to pay too much attention to him and massage him, or I got to do whatever you got to do to keep him happy. Tomlin doesn't have a problem with this. So I think Ebron, you get a better Ebron in Pittsburgh in that culture with that coach in that system than you did with Indy, that I think he felt as if though like they were blaming him for everything.
Yeah, and for me as a Steelers fan, and obviously you and I do a lot of analyzing this league, like, I know what Ebron is, to your point, and I'm not expecting George Kittle. If I get a George Kittle week out of him, great, but I'm not expecting
it
for the
next
month.
Like, exactly. You know, I swear to God, Ebron's going to be one of these guys. He's going to have a game with Pittsburgh, like, right away out of the gate. 7 catches and a touchdown, 88 yards or something.
Multiple touchdown games.
All the fantasy guys are going to jump on.
That's right.
Next week, Eric Ebron, great matchup. Bengals, great matchup. Boom, done.
2 for 12.
Yeah, 2 for 12, disappears, drops, wide open for a touchdown, dropped it.
Yeah.
Whatever, you know what I mean? Like, and then, Eric Ebron. And then, you know, week 4, oh, my God, he's got 2 touchdowns and 12 catches.
Yeah.
That's who he is, guys.
Right. I agree. And look, handling Ebron, whatever people have to deal with off field, and the Lions didn't assassinate him on the way out. Dealing with what Ebron, whatever baggage he has, and I'm not suggesting that there is a lot, is going to feel like a cakewalk compared to what happened with Antonio Brown. Look, the Steelers... Antonio Brown made it easy on the Steelers by no showing that 1 week. And the Steelers did everything they could to get rid of him. They got what they got for him because they knew it wasn't going to be a lot. And I give them credit for the way they handled that situation. It was different than the way they had to handle the Le'Veon Bell scenario. And Antonio Brown wasn't completely assassinated character-wise on the way out by the Steelers. They washed their hands of it and said, he's no longer on the team. We're moving on. And obviously, they
sort of
proven to be
right. Well, that's why their organization is respected in a sense that it is, too.
That's right.
Right? Like, they're, Tomlin's not that type of guy.
Yeah.
And, like, you saw anything on the way out that happened was pretty much instigated by AB.
100%.
Right? Oh, I was mistreated. You guys don't know. Ben's a jerk. You guys, like, it's like, what do you mean we don't know? Everyone knows Ben's a jerk.
Yeah,
right?
He's a jerk.
You're a jerk too. So, like, what's your point? Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you're not telling us we don't anything we don't know already here, AB. And listen, even AB, we've only got about 2 minutes here, Mike. But
yeah,
I see AB now that shots are coming in at him. Arians says hell no, and I actually believe him. Right? Arians is like no, and he goes, I know him. Yeah, and Arians knows him. You know, Arians was with Pittsburgh before, right? So he said no. He says, I know who he is. Like, that was his exact quote. He goes, I know him. I know who he is. And he said, it's not happening.
Too much deep.
He even sort of dropped. Yeah, he said, he's not as bad as people. He said, I don't hate him. I'm just letting you know it's not a fit here. And he brought up a good point. He goes, guys, we're stacked at that position.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes, I don't need him. We don't need him. But so that's sort of out of the way. But all right, and I'll throw it to you. We only got about a minute and a half here.
Yeah.
I was going to say, but Antonio Brown is still on this list. It's like, guys, he hasn't been charged with anything, all right?
Yeah.
Just because you don't like him and some chick sued him, you can't keep him out of the NFL here. Like, if he doesn't get signed, like, listen, if you don't sign him, fine, because he's a head case, and I don't have a problem with that if you don't want him on your team. But if he's like not allowed to play, then that's garbage. Because I'm not, I don't, can't believe I'm defending the guy, but if you add it all up, dude, he hasn't even been arrested. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would just say that three teams had to deal with him inside of a calendar year, and he found himself off of all three of those teams. Based on the videos that you and I and everybody else has watched, he doesn't appear to be particularly stable. I think the commissioner doesn't want him to play in the league, but I don't think he can totally prevent him from playing. It doesn't mean that he won't see some sort of suspension for conduct unbecoming or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but he's already sort of been suspended. That's you know, the whole thing. But we can go to get into the Antonio Brown debate. We'll have a lot of time for that. Mike Blewett, get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Get on the grid. SportsGrid. Morenci Unfiltered continues. Thanks to Mike Blewett for stepping up and in with us as we continue the final podcast of the week. And we appreciate you joining us. You know, we've done some interesting formats with the podcast, including some live tapings on YouTube, you know, trains, planes, and automobiles, baby. As, you know, we've got guests on, we do video formats, live tapings, take your questions, and everything else in between. But we talk NFL football with Mike Blewett. I want to bring up right now the news of the day, so to speak, or the news of the last 48 hours. And, of course, these are pretty crazy times for everybody and very unpredictable times for everybody. No, you know, we've never been through this before, right? In our lifetimes, in the last 100 years, this is the most unique situation other than, World War II and wartime situations. So no one can predict the future, but the talk over the last 24 to 48 hours has been, is the football season in jeopardy? Is the NFL season in jeopardy? Is the college football season in jeopardy? And I know a lot of people that tune into the podcast, either you're bettors and you bet on everything, or you are CFL football fans as well. And let's be real, guys. The CFL is starting to become into real question here. Now, I don't know. Like I said, none of us can predict the future. But, yeah, we can and we can't. I mean, the scientists' charts and graphs as far as this virus have been pretty accurate and pretty bang on. You know, is this thing going away? I don't know until we have a vaccination at least, some sort of vaccination at least, that it'll start to mitigate itself moving forward. But – so the CFL season starts pretty early, you know, compared to when it used to. It used to be like Canada Day or like the first week of July type of thing. And now it's like mid-June. Now, when you consider you've got training camp and preseason and all that other stuff, you'd be naive to believe that the Canadian Football League is going to be starting on time. All right. Now, the only thing is the CFL season's too long as it is. And Zach Collaros, some of you would remember Zach Collaros, standout quarterback with the Cincinnati Bearcats in college. He's kicked around the Canadian Football League, but he's with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers now. He won a championship, actually. I've had him on the show before. Nice guy. But he's talking about how, you know, listen, the CFL season's long to begin with, and guys in the CFL need to get paid. So he doesn't have a problem with like a 10, 11, 12 game season, whatever he was talking about, whatever's necessary. And I think that's what we're looking at already for the CFL. So, you know, the CFL, I just want to throw it out there. But the thing is, the CFL season is too long as it is, right? But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. This all really started. And in fact, you guys know I read everything, man, right? So I came across one of the top experts, the top deans of sports law and entertainment, all right? And, you know, one of these top deans of sports law and of entertainment at Boston College, sports business, ethics, et cetera, entertainment law. he stated it. He said, in my opinion, there won't be a college football season. And he's like, he's one of the head guys at Boston College. And he said, I don't think. And he goes, I don't speak for anybody. But he goes, in my opinion, there won't be a college football season. And Kirk Herbstreit's not exactly a guy that's going to rock the boat ever, right? Herbie doesn't rock the boat. So Kirk Herbstreit was asked about this, and he said he doesn't think there's going to be a college football season, and he doesn't think there's going to be an NFL football season. Now, listen, you take away people's baseball opening day, all right, it's heartbreaking. You know, March Madness, it sucks, but March Madness was more just like a betting event. You know what I mean? Like, I swear, like, even if they didn't play the NHL, and I'll tell you guys right now, in my opinion, hockey's done. They're not playing hockey again. There's not going to be enough time. Bettman and the league, they don't want to cut into it. I'm seeing GMs are talking about how they don't want to play in August, and they can't play in August because it's going to throw next year off. So I'll tell you now, in my opinion, the NHL is done. The NBA has a little bit more options than the NHL. There's less players. The NBA is more open to, like, tournament formats. If they could blast through somehow and still get anointed champion, I think the NBA would try to pull it off. I think the NHL is done. The CFL is going to be delayed. And I'm just telling you, look, the Olympics were canceled. And I get it. It's 11,000 athletes and stuff, but the Olympics are in late July going into August. All right. So if they're already canceling things in July, and every day that we screw this up, the response to this, it grows and it extenuates like another week. Like, you know, I've heard experts say each day that people don't socially distance and each day that we screw this up, it grows another week type thing. Like, you have to add on another week of us screwing up. And there's still a lot of screwing up going on. So Kirk Herbstreit, and people are like, well, Herbstreit's not a doctor, you should shut up. It's like, no, he's not a doctor, but he's the biggest analyst in college football, and he's giving you his opinion, saying that he doesn't think that he's going to be doing his job this year. And he stated, he goes, no one knows. Anyone's prediction. Oh, he doesn't know. Of course no one knows. But, you know, if you're not, you know, you'd have to be not paying attention right now to start realizing that, you know, we're a couple of months behind the curve here. Right? We're a couple of months behind the curve. So, you know, I'm not giving up on the NBA. I've given up on hockey. I don't believe there's going to be hockey. Baseball, there'll probably be an 81-game season if they can pull it off. But like I stated, you know, I don't know, right, any of this. All I can tell you is facts. And the fact is that college football coaches and the NCAA are very aware that college football is in peril. Put it this way, Brian Kelly, Notre Dame coach, all right, not exactly like a pinko commie, you know what I mean? Oh, he's making things up. Brian Kelly said that if things aren't normal July 1st, like, he's screwed, he won't be ready for the season. And Notre Dame play in August in Ireland. Yeah, like Notre Dame are going to Ireland. Like, yeah, that's happening. Notre Dame are going to Ireland in 3 months, 4 months. Like, come on. Like, let's be real here, right? So there's already talk, and I'll tell you right now, there's no fans. There'll be no fans anywhere for a while. I think there'll be no fans at any sporting event for like 2 years type thing. Like, let's say hypothetically the NBA comes back and they bang off the playoffs in some tournament format or whatever, and they come up with something. There'll be no fans. College football is in a panic about not having fans because they make a lot of money off the fans because they sell like 100,000 tickets, right, for games. The NBA doesn't care about the arena gate. That's the whole thing. The NHL does too. Now, there's a lot of money at stake, obviously. The NHL also doesn't want to give the money back to people because they have everyone's money and they're not going to give it back until it's officially canceled. For lack of a better term here, man, the whole thing's a shit show. All right? So, which leads us into all we have is what we have. And one thing that we do have as of now is the NFL draft. And Roger Goodell is very adamant that the NFL draft is moving forward. Now, I'm sure you're all aware of the, you know, what the NFL draft's plans were. And their plan was to hold it in the fountains in the outside the Bellagio. You know, the Bellagio has a big sort of, you know, waterfront property outside. It's the famous Bellagio fountains, you know, Ocean's 11 and 12 and all that stuff in the movies. And they were literally going to have the players like in the fountain. All right. They were going to have the players in the fountain and they were going to bring them in the water. And it was going to be a big, big spectacle. They were hoping to have 400,000 people crammed on the strip. Clearly, none of that's happening. So the NFL draft is proceeding. It's not going to be in Vegas anymore. They're doing it like in from a TV studio and the players are going to be at home. So it's going to be very like, you know, Skype and we're going to, you know, send a whatever. Players are going to be stepping up and in, you know, just via video after they're drafted. And it's going to be very digital, sort of very modern, like we're all living right now. You know, I mean, the internet's going to break soon, guys. I mean, everyone's online at the same time now. It's over the top. So the NFL draft's going on, but this story just broke as well. Roger Goodell sent a memo out. He sent a memo out that Peter King, you know, remember Peter King? He's got a podcast. And Goodell's basically like threatening people. Of course, like even in a time of a pandemic, Goodell's got to be a jerk off, right? So Mickey Loomis, the GM of the Saints, said that you can't have the draft. Loomis said, this isn't fantasy football. This is not a fantasy football draft that you conduct with a list of things on a piece of paper. There's a lot of work that goes into preparing for a draft. There's a lot of work that is done during the draft. And listen, it's very, very difficult to conduct. And we wouldn't be able to do it in a way that it would do justice to the process. All right, so that's what Loomis said in an interview to someone, and Goodell flipped out. Goodell also knows, how about this? The National Football League General Manager Subcommittee had a vote the other day. They recommended 6-1. 6-1 to cancel the draft. So basically, it wasn't like some, oh, a Sports Illustrated polled 7 GMs. No, no, this is the subcommittee. So Goodell's like freaking out because Goodell knows that they don't want to do it. So look, 7 general managers are on this committee. 6 of them said we shouldn't have the draft. We can't have the draft. NFL subcommittee recommended a GM committee voted by a 6-1 recommendation to delay the draft due to concerns of the ability for teams to gather information about draft prospects. Teams usually have an opportunity to go through expanded medical evaluations and bring players into individual facilities to further evaluate the potential fit. It cannot be done now. As you know, how the hell are you meeting anybody? There's travel bans. So you can't even, you know what I mean? Like, you know, how are you meeting people? And now you're going to ask teams to pick a draft pick, some kid they never met or they met once and they're going to watch on tape. Like, I understand NFL teams saying, this sucks, all right? Like, we got a problem here. Not that it can't be done. Everyone's in the same position, right? All teams, you're all in the same boat. But it is challenging. But basically now Goodell goes on, so sent them a letter, a private memo. Public discussion of issues relating to the draft so serves no useful purpose and is grounds for disciplinary action. Goodell is threatening to fine anybody that says that the draft shouldn't go forward. Like, really, that's the type of leadership we're dealing with. And you see leadership is screwed everywhere right now. And you see, so Goodell is basically saying, we're holding a draft, and if you don't like it, you can't tell anyone you don't like it. Suck it. Otherwise, I'm going to fine you. Goodell says in the memo, everyone recognizes that the public health conditions are highly uncertain. But there are no assurances that we can select a different date and be confident the conditions are going to be significantly more favorable than they are today. Goodell goes on to write in the draft and the memo, the draft will serve a positive purpose for our clubs, our fans, and the country at large. So, you know, Goodell's thinking big picture. He wants the NFL to save the day. And the only show in town and all that and business, America goes on and I get it. And I'm not ripping Goodell for it. I don't like the fact that Goodell tells them he's going to find them. if they speak about the draft. And you see, it's pretty significant that 6 out of 7 general managers on this subcommittee said that they should postpone this thing. So we move forward right now like the draft is going on. And Goodell's moving forward like the draft is going on. And so you hear right there was the internal memo that, yeah, the draft is going on whether you like it or not. And it's pretty clear the GMs don't like it. So we're running out of time on this show right here. But you can get the full podcast, of course, over at Apple iTunes, Morency Unfiltered. Follow Sports Grid on Twitter is the best way, at Sports Grid. You get all the links to, like, the different apps. But we're on Pluto TV. We're on Zumo TV. We're on Stir. All free apps. Free. All right? A lot of you wait, well, when's the show going to be posted on YouTube? The shows are running, like, on these apps all the time as well, and it's free. And Pharrell's got a podcast as well. Check it out, Pharrell on a Bench. A lot of people are tuning into the podcast. And don't forget, me and Cam are doing game time decisions on a daily basis as well. So I think the best place to go is at Sports Grid on Twitter. They post all the links for the different formats in which you can tune in. But you guys should already know all of this by now. Doris Burke, she of NBA fame, Doris Burke tests positive for coronavirus. And we wish Doris Burke the best. See, that's what I'm saying, man. Like, people are talking about playing sports and stuff. Like, everyone has this right now, doesn't know they have it or are really sick and has it. It's a domino effect that it's going to be very, very challenging. Next week on the podcast, we'll get into what the future of sport is going to look like over the next year and a half or so. Because as I stated, there's no way they're going to be bringing fans back anytime soon in any capacity. It's going to be too dangerous. Like, college football is sort of like accepting this right now. That college football, listen, there's so much money at stake with television, with college football, that they're going to play even without fans. But they're still going to lose a ton of money if they have no fans. And the problem is, if you're living in a situation where it's too dangerous for fans to be there, then therefore it's too dangerous for the players to be there. And the cameraman to be there, and the coaches. All these coaches are old, man. College football coaches. Nick Saban's like 70 years old, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're the most vulnerable ones. they're the most vulnerable ones. As I look up on my screen and I see Tony Kornheiser right now. Yeah, like Tony Kornheiser is going and sitting in a press box right now. All right? So stay safe out there, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. And don't forget to subscribe so you get all the updates and notifications of all the shows on YouTube. And, of course, Apple iTunes. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.